and one right, and beginning the visit with Marvin and Ms. Guthrie, this continuation of visiting Marvin and Ms. Guthrie this Wednesday after supper, or during supper, the 1st of November, 72. Channel 1 right, and beginning the visit with Marvin and Ms. Guthrie during supper and after this Wednesday, the 1st of November, 72.
Well, we better go and let these people go to bed.
Go to bed?
Y'all better go to bed so we can go home.
Seems like I remember hearing Woodard say something about that one time, but I had forgotten that.
Yeah, that, he was telling me about that one time.
Now that would be something, wouldn't it? They had broke in his house.
Mm-hmm.
And had the plunder with them.
That's right. And he stopped, he overtake them on the road and give them a ride.
Yeah.
Plunder and all.
And he was going to let him know.
Well, he was going to notify the sheriff then that somebody had broken his house.
Oh, yeah.
And he picked the guy up that broke him. He suspected him, so he figured, well, if he then came right on to the sheriff, well, he'll just save the sheriff from having to go hunting. And the guy suspected something just before he got into Micanopy. Oh, that about 441 somewhere. That was before, you know, the four-lane that road. So he suspicioned that Woodard was going uptown, so he better jump out. So he jumped out of the truck and run.
With the plunder.
With the plunder. So Woodard, I guess he got in another gear and went on and notified the sheriff. And they caught him.
And they caught him.
And they caught him.
Yes. You know, it's just something that they somebody don't pester them all the time.
It sure is. It would if they weren't them dogs, I believe, too.
Because now you know they don't have anything much.
Oh, no, I don't think they know. They wouldn't have anything.
But, you know, they wouldn't, people wouldn't know it, so they just go
That's
in
true.
And break in anyhow. And you see, Coleman and Miss Annie leave there all the time.
Yeah.
And every time he goes, she goes.
That's right.
So she won't stay there by herself.
Yeah,
well, I have a 90.
I
don't know, but I just feel like.
I told him not long ago that him and Annie ought to get out of there and go somewhere and be around her people.
I just feel like if you just fool around there a little bit, you'd tear off a load of shot. I just feel like he'd shoot you.
All right.
I believe he would.
Yeah, but poor old Woodard is so feeble.
Yeah, but that shotgun ain't that hard to pick up.
Well,
I don't blame him. I guess I would, too. You know, at night, you know, and he couldn't see you.
He started out one day in this big old 90. And a half-foot alligator lying in the road, and he didn't go back and get his gun and come up there, and he shot that gator and he killed him. And he was telling Marvin about it, and Marvin said, Woodard, for goodness sakes, go hide that gator. Said if a game warden was to come along, he'd send you to the federal penitentiary. He was a vegan, too.
He didn't do a thing in the world but go and hook his old mule to him and pull him off down in the swamp. Game on, he'd come along, he got gator, Woodard, mule, and all.
He didn't know it was long.
I don't know what they'd have done with the mule, but it scraped the automobile, you know.
You know, Marvin, in a way now, just looking back, of course, when you all invested in all that hay equipment over there, if you could just have seen ahead and invested in some of this irrigation, you'd been way ahead, wouldn't you?
Yes, we could have just raised some grass.
Because the mole crickets and everything got in.
hear them army worms and mole crickets and things.
Army worms.
Woody said one time there's two geeky niggers.
Yeah, he used to tell me all them kind of
talking
things.
About them, and he said that they couldn't either one talk plain. Well, one of them said, I believe it's...
No, he says, one of them says, Craig Gunness says, believe it's gonna rain, says, listen at the thunder. He said, thunder, it meant thunder. The other one said, just listen at, listen at you, buddy. He said, you can't even say tender. And he couldn't say it either. He was going to try to say it, and he said tender.
Yeah, that was
Wooder's story. Wooder,
yeah. How did he start that?
He said he's two geeky neighbors.
Oh, geeky.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, one of them said, I believe it's going to rain. I heard it thunder, and he said, good gracious, he said, you can't even say tender.
He couldn't say it either.
And Wooder told that.
He told me another one time. He said he worked with these guys. He'd, you know, me and Wooder get the. We used to build fence together a little bit. And they'd get Wooder to help us, you know, help me with the fence. And he'd tell me all kind of stuff like that. He said one time there's two fellas working, and said one of them went off and bought him a watch and said he was proud of that watch, and but he couldn't tell the time of day. So he said after a while, said one of them asked him, says what time is it getting to be? Says I'm getting hungry, it must be about lunchtime. They pulled his watch out and looked at it and turned it to the guy. He couldn't tell the time either, and he looked at it, and he said, dog, today, ain't it? And he stuck it back in his pocket, and neither one of them knew what time it was. Yeah, it wasn't admitted. So he looked at it, just held it to that guy so he could see what time it was, and he didn't know either. He said, dog, today. He still didn't know.
My Marvin, did you ever see one of these fellas come up to the gate and they just sort of stop, it sort of baffles them, and they start studying how to get it open?
Yeah. But let me tell you something. It actually happened in Jacksonville. That was before the traffic got so bad over there, and it was bad then. It was a fella, he was driving one of these tractor trailers, and he was loaded, and he pulled up to a stoplight, and his motor stalled, and he couldn't get it started, and he cranked, and he cranked, and there was somebody behind him that just kept blowing the horn, you know, blowing the horn, wanted him to get gone, and he couldn't get that motor started. So after a while, he got tired of that horn blowing back there, and he got out his tractor, and he cab, and he went back there, and he told the man, he says, mister, he says, I'll tell you what, he says, if you'll go and start that motor of mine, he says, I'll blow your horn. He figured that horn had to go, he might as well blow it.
Well, you can't, Marvin, you can't borrow that fellow's camper then, can you?
No.
So you are to talk too much.
Yeah, I done said the wrong thing.
You said the wrong thing. So you ain't going to be able to get off.
No, I don't have to.
Unless you stay in the motel.
That's right.
You just said, well, I have a friend who might like it.
I just go and tell my wife wants to borrow your camper. Yes, that's simple.
Well, you know, I have had ideas about a camper. You know, they're so handy. And I figured, well, sir, if I just had a camper, a little truck with a camper on it, I could just pull up anywhere and be right at home. I'd have my toothpaste and everything, you see, right there. My coffee pot.
I wouldn't have one. They're going to pass a law for cars that's going to put two on them.
Well, a camper, he's talking about these same little things you put over the body of your truck.
Well, either way, I don't care. I'd take the time you pull, either one. Them's nicest that you pull. Mm-hmm. But I take it by the seat, and you can park these others in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or just anywhere along the road. But they don't pick up any more room, you see. Then
no,
just you. Oh, I'd be scared to do that. I'd be afraid somebody would come along and kill me.
Well, you see, I can pull up in your yard there, and it gets too late to go home, so I just spend the night right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd have your gas, everything right there, cooking gas.
Yes, everything to cook with. You'd be independent. And you'd just come home whenever you wanted to.
Well, as a matter of fact, you'd be at home. In your truck.
Yes, sir. You could just stop right up there on the court square.
Yeah, because you don't have to pay that meter after 5 o'clock, do you?
Yeah. No.
Till 8 the next morning, by that time, you could be gone. You're a free park all night.
Yeah. You know, the city would like that.
Go on, sure.
Just spending the night up there. That's the courthouse. I tell you, it takes a little brass to get along in the world. When you are so timid, you start thinking about what other people are going to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you're losing out. It don't matter what they say. Just go on. It's going to be another week or two, though, before you get a mess of greens.
Oh, yeah. I saw the cutest thing yesterday evening. We had worked out there cleaning up and tearing down that old cow pen and hauling it off. And we run down to the creek and one Diane Botnight's little boy had on a wig, and it was gray, and he had his face fixed, you know, just like a woman, his eyebrows painted, his lips, and he had on a long dress and white pumps, you know, and I couldn't figure it out to save my life. Who in the world are you? And Diane carried him into the store. And I still didn't know who he was. They were just laughing, you know, and I knew that he was dressed up for Halloween.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And he looked just exactly like a girl. And I went back in there and I said, well, who is it anyway? And he says, it's Donnie.
Donnie got nice.
I said, Geraldine? She said, yeah, this is Geraldine. I said, well, you need to put him on the Flip Wilson show with Flip Wilson. He looked just like a girl. He was so cute.
What does her husband do?
He's postmaster in Williston.
Williston? That's a good ways off to be postman.
That's a good long way, but see, he was in Gainesville for a long while. He wasn't postmastering it. He was going to school, and he graduated as postmaster. And this job come open, and they offered it to him, and he grabbed it.
What do you know? He's a postmaster at Williston. Hmm. Oh, gee whiz. And here Faye's in business over on this side.
That's
of the
right.
Does he ever get home?
Every night. He goes back into. What time they close the post office? About 4 o'clock, isn't it? I mean, you know.
He gets home before night, long time.
They have places you can, you know, mail your letters and things like that at the post office, but the actual office will close about 4, I guess, in the evening.
Yeah.
And open, I guess, about 9 o'clock next morning.
Yeah. Gee whiz. Well, she don't want to move over on that side of the county and leave what she's doing.
But I sure wouldn't have her job.
No, I don't want that school bus job either. Talk to me about that deal one time, and I told him, no, forget it, just don't go no further, that's it.
Oh, really?
I don't want no school bus.
Yeah.
I just haven't got the patience.
Well, I wondered about that. I've never seen too much of it, but you know it must take a right smart.
It does. With all them children on there, and all of them are hollering and going on, you got to keep them quiet.
Ms. Dunn said, I think she told me that 10 of them kids stayed over, weren't it 10? 8 or 10.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
Over at her house.
That Halloween night, the Halloween night.
And she was babysitting for some woman, or some woman went to whereabouts?
I don't know.
And she had, I think, three, her kids keeping, it was two or three. I said, what did Mr. Dodd say? Not, he didn't even open his mouth.
Now that was Halloween?
From Halloween on.
That was, you know, during the weenie roast. Y'all was over there, you know, he'd stop by the house. There was a bunch of children there.
And
well, there's a bunch of them stayed overnight with us.
Stayed overnight? Spent
over the weekend,
weekend,
I guess, yeah.
Well, the impression I got was that Berman and Shelley didn't even know who was over there. They were just Cub Scouts from Hawthorne. Now, maybe she did know.
Oh.
She said they stayed over the weekend.
It was some of the kids' friends, I guess. School friends.
Don't tell me that.
That's what she told me. And she said it was either two or three that she was keeping from Miss Somebody. They went off. And I said, you don't mean to tell me that. And she said, yeah. And I said, what Mr. Dodd say about that? Why, he didn't open his mouth.
What you gonna do? What? No, you're not.
Another one.
Well, no wonder. No wonder at Christmas time she has to buy everything she wants on Christmas.
Oh, Lord.
She's young and spry and healthy. She's not old and dilapidated like I am.
Well, I'm glad to know what it is.
But I just couldn't put up with that.
You know, they had a sack. It's a regular grocery sack. With that many wieners in it. No telling how many packages of wieners they had. Then they had another sack over there that had marshmallows in it. Just no telling how many little sacks of marshmallows in it. Why, they didn't make a dent on the food.
Well, did Mr. Dodd and them have to furnish all the food?
I don't know.
I have a night that they did.
Well, they had enough left for two or three more wieners.
They had a whole box of potato chips.
Hmm. Of which?
Potato chips. It was a big double bag of potato chips.
Uh-huh.
That's about 12 bags. A whole box.
Hmm.
Well, you know when they first come down here? I wasn't acquainted with Ms. Dodd too much. But the Glistens, She was always making cakes and pies and cooking stuff and caring to people. And I got acquainted with her. I said, "Miss Dodd, how can you do that? How can you do that with as many children as you've got?" And they'd give just to anybody that was going to have a baby, they'd give a baby shower, and she'd just go overboard. Wedding presents, graduation presents, birthday presents, the same way, buy expensive gifts. And I just never could understand. I never was able to do things like that. I'd like to, but I just couldn't.
And when she come down here, they owed her for that place over there.
That's right.
And Bubba wasn't working. He didn't have a job then. He just worked over there with the cattle.
She's too good. She's too free-hearted.
They get by with it somehow.
Well,
I sure do.
I think that he found out that he wasn't a cowboy anyway. A good one. So he just turned all the cattle over to her, and he got him a job.
Yeah. Well,
And you know, there's Faith and Diane that absolutely imposes on her. They put their young ones on her. Miss Dodd keeps Faith's kids for Faith to gaddock about and have a big time.
Yeah.
And when they get tired of them, they send them down to Miss Dodd's. Yeah. Faye and Louise bought a knife when her little old girl was little. And Miss Dodd did say, and I said, "Well, put a stop to it." I said, "I just wouldn't have it."
Mm-hmm.
But she hated to open her mouth.
Yeah.
She's afraid she'd hurt their feelings. But you let some people in there just walk all over you.
Well, now, that, you talk about money now, that dining room furniture they've got, they didn't give us, the people didn't give that away.
Mm-mm.
And that new stuff in the living room, too, I saw.
Well, they completely furnished that house, that new house, didn't it? I mean, they didn't use any of their old furniture at all, I don't think.
No. I haven't been in the rooms, but the, you know, this living room and the dining room.
Hmm.
They got new beds. All the way around.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Here again.
Well, now, but down there at the corner, they, Miss Bulk and I don't get out much, does she?
They tell me that she won't go nowhere. She just stays there at home.
Yeah.
She used to.
They just stay there and tend to their own business, don't they?
I don't think they got any business to tend to.
Well, if you stay home all the time, you can't have much business, can you?
They just take care of that fishing business. John Henry don't go visiting.
John Henry never goes any place except to the lake and back. He never did. He never would.
Why in the world does he get away with it? I wouldn't go anywhere either if I could get away with it. I wouldn't go to Gainesville every day if I had any choice.
Did you ever talk to him?
John Henry? No.
Would he come out there, you know, when the surveyors first started, they started over there, Mr. Dodd's Corner. Because that used to belong to the Denham place. And Baron Denham sold it to a fellow by the name of Bowen. Well, you know, they knew where to start, but they were over there hunting the corner stall. And he was going over to Mr. Dodd's to cut his hay. And Ms. Dodd come down there, and she was helping them, try to help them find it, you know. And John Henry, when we got through and come out, why, John Henry was down there. And we stopped with him. And I declare, he acts to me like he, I don't know. Can't tell nothing about what he's talking about. John Henry, I said, you just exactly like your mama. He said, Marvin, about him having so much sense.
I don't know. I don't remember that.
he said, you think George, he said, he don't know nothing. He thought I meant that he was bright like his mama. And I was talking about him looking like his mama.
And he looks like his mama?
He looks just like her.
But he don't take after her the other way.
But he thought that I meant he had a lot of sense like his mama.
That was a smart woman. His mother was a smart woman.
And you remember her?
Miss Mama?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They had a garden the year round.
Oh, did they?
Weather didn't get too hot or too cold.
And now these people don't have a garden at all.
Mm-mm.
Well, what is it? They got enough to do without that?
They just like we are. They just plain lazy.
They don't want to put out. Do you figure garden is a considerable amount of work?
No, sir.
Not a whole lot.
Mm-mm.
And it's not a
cost. All you got to do is just to loosen up the ground, keep the ground loose enough.
It's not a costly thing. You can get a few seeds with loose change, less than a dollar. Doesn't cost much to get a garden, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you.
One time, long time ago, Mr. Vaughn, he had his beard down to here and his face was all hairy, you know. I know we'll forget that. Mr. Sam Turner over there had, who was it arrested for stealing his hogs? Cato was it, his son-in-law?
I guess somebody, I remember somebody, yeah.
And anyway, Mr. Botnight was, they put him on the witness stand. And I never will forget that, and he said, that was, now y'all have to go careful with me. Remember, I had pneumonia one time.
He just wanted them.
He had pneumonia. I wonder how come him to tell him that.
He just didn't want him to cross-examine him too heavy, I don't guess. His recollection wasn't as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why I ain't got no sense.
You had pneumonia?
Oh, yeah. I've had pneumonia twice.
Well, there you are, you see. I don't know. Somehow, I have a feeling that John Henry has more fun than I have.
Well, John Henry does more work than anyone else on that planet.
He don't have no fun.
But you notice when he walks, why, he just raises them feet.
Mm-hmm.
And away he goes.
And he looks like he's happy all the time.
Yes, he does.
Well, now, you don't look like that.
No.
I don't feel like that. I don't know how I look.
Well, I wonder, does George ever get out of the house?
Well, George is ailing, isn't he? What's wrong with John Henry?
I don't know. Is anything wrong with George? I thought he got plumb well.
Oh, I thought he had sugar and everything.
John Henry said he's all right, except he's lazy. The other day.
Oh, but you saw him?
I saw John Henry.
Over there?
Mm-hmm.
You stopped?
Yeah.
He come out there, you know, where the people were looking for the corner stop.
Oh, you mean that just the other day?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see. I seen George not to talk to, but I saw him a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was.
Well, now, if you needed a little help for anything, you wouldn't go down and get John Henry to help you.
I don't think so. John Henry is too busy with his own chores. If it wasn't for John, I don't know what that place would do for help.
Well, he couldn't make hay.
You know, Louise and I used to be the best kind of friends. We were so close.
Oh.
And I don't know, she just got to where she just stayed by herself.
Like Louise Buckner?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think happened?
I don't know. Just nothing as far as I know. But I've heard her say many times she wouldn't think about having a baby if she couldn't have me with her.
Yeah. Well, you think she's changed?
I think something's happened to her. I think something, from what I can understand, happened to her like it did to Virgil. Her daughter-in-law tells me that she won't go nowhere. She just stays right there all the time.
Yeah. Well, Virgil don't even get out enough to see him, does he?
No.
You ever seen him?
No, I don't see him. I seen him one time about 3 or 4 months ago. And he's larger than George.
He's
no shade. Yes, he had shade.
You know, anybody needs a little bit of sunlight once in a while, don't they? Looks to me like they'd have to have.
That's funny. But all he does is sleep and eat. And he don't work on that fish line.
Then he don't work on anything. It's about time for him to crawl out, though. He usually crawls out during hunting season.
Does he?
Yeah, hunt a few days and crawl back in.
Stay in the bed.
He'll stay in the bed the whole summer long, and how in the world if anybody can do that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
What sort of hunting does he do?
Any kind of hunting. He hunts turkeys and birds and squirrels, just anything that he can shoot at.
Yeah. Well, you got to study the law now. This fellow, this game warden you were talking about, down there, you run into?
You mean the fisherman? Is that who you're talking
about? And he didn't know.
He didn't know nothing. He didn't know it was just slow to kill a turkey.
I wonder what he's doing down there. Fishing?
No, he was down there.
He thought it was against the law to go fishing.
He was listening for the turkeys to try and locate
them. He got that little transistor deal, you know.
And they got a transistor on the wing, and he can tell where they were at. I don't know why he wanted to find out where he was at. But Marvin run four boys out of the pasture. And they're shooting. He didn't run them out, but he told them they better get out because the game warden caught them in there. They'd get them. And he said he didn't know it was going to slow. The game warden said he didn't know.
Evidently, he hadn't read the yellow tag, had he?
Yeah.
He wanted to know, was it all right for him to go fishing? I told him, yes, he had a fishing license. He said, well, he had that. I said, well, go fishing then.
Yeah.
And him again, going.
We better go home.
They put that license on for everybody, didn't they?
Everybody, regardless.
Young and old.
Young and old. And even if you're fishing in your bathtub, you got to have a license if you're getting caught.
You mean on your own property?
On your own property or anywhere. It don't make any difference
where you
are.
Yeah, they can arrest me fishing down there in the hole.
Yes, right.
In the field.
I never heard of anything like that.
You got to have that fishing license.
Well,
regardless.
As the fellow says,
on your own property.
Well, I don't believe that'd be constitutional.
I don't either, but
to arrest a man on his own property is fishing his own fish.
It's against the law if you ain't got a license.
To fish your own
fish. Now, it was where, when it first started, on Orange Lake or La Clusie or any stream that joins that. But now it's any pond.
But then, it's anywhere, regardless. If you go fishing, you need a fishing license.
Well, let me tell you, if y'all have to go, you go ahead. Now, I don't want to hold you, but this is more comfortable than I'll be after you leave.
Oh, we're going to have to go anyway. It's what?
Oh, it ain't much.
It's 8 o'clock, a little after 8.
Regular. It's sometime, you got plenty of time.
Do you like eggplants?
No, I love them.
Have you had any?
No.
I haven't either.
What? Well, eggplant.
Mm-hmm. And they're around, aren't they?
Nothing.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know.
Looks
Freddy's
like
got a whole field
could give us eggplant, don't it?
I was going to stop down here and get some more greens. I forgot about it.
Oh, yes, Faye.
I'll get some tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, they were good.
That place you told us about.
on the prairie.
Mm-hmm.
But you get...
Yeah, those are good greens.
Large. No, I got a mustard.
You got mustard? Mm-hmm. Do you cook meat with your mustard?
Uh-huh. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so good to get some fresh vegetables. Oh, my. Anything that's fresh.
Well, you know what I'm hoping? I'm hoping we'll get another drip or two of rain.
Yeah, me too.
And the weather will stay warm enough where the grass can go a little bit.
But
you know, my grass just about eat down.
Well, you know, I was digging some post holes today. And I dug, I must have went down 4 feet, and I never did find any moisture.
Not bad,
though.
No. After I hit a moisture about that 4 under the ground, and then it got dry.
Yeah.
I never did find any more moisture.
Well, you get up and let's go. Okay. We're underneath people.
Yeah.
Why, this is just fine. Just a glad
we come over
good.
Here and stand.
What are you all doing now besides irrigating?
Just mostly moving around and cleaning up.
We tore down the old cabin and hauled that away and burnt a whole lot of trash.
We're going
he's been moving.
Renew and rebuild and tear up. And
well, now you've got your fence in over there.
Oh yeah.
Where you was working.
Yeah.
That swamp.
Yeah, we're ready for them.
You're ready for them. Yeah.
All we got to do is just say, come out and close the gate.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's it. Yeah.
Well, but every time you look around, you see two or three things to do.
That's right. Well, all the fences at home need tearing down and repairing. It needs tightening. They're all loose.
Yeah.
You know, the corners has got slack, and they're just coming, the fella says, kind of in like accordion.
Well,
and need moving and tightening that.
And these little stiff wires that you got from the fella, that won't take care of it?
Oh,
just
no.
Stick a few extra ones
in. Oh, well, it would, but you know, I want to undo them all and tighten them.
Oh.
I got some at the house.
Well,
you know,
I
wanted that guy to bring me some more, but he never did.
He may have them up there.
Well,
he
might.
Well, he got nothing else to do. Just remind him. Well, y'all come to where we stay. Oh,
Lord.
Yeah, y'all come see us
once
in a while.
We will do that.
John went right around 600 or 700, I'm just guessing. And this is the only copy. And the end of the visit was Marvin and Ms. Guthrie this Wednesday night, the 1st of November, 72. Channel 1 right, around 600 or 700, and the end of the visit with Marvin and Mrs. Guthrie this Wednesday after supper, the 1st of November, 72.
And they didn't say anything.
No.
But I'd love to see her just
there. I've never seen anybody roll back and laugh like that.
That's almost worth it just to see her wind up.
Well, Rick, on your travels now, it's Brother Wimberly. He's the revelation.
Yeah. He was the one I didn't think I'd come across either. Because I was just going to pick these with John. And it was Wimberly's field. Wimberly met us on the way in. He was just sitting there in his little Ford Falcon on his way out. I was following John in my car, and John stopped to talk to him. And went on in, I just waved, and saw it was Wimberly sitting down low with that cap on. He's got that same tannish duckbill cap all the time on, sitting on his head. It's down low near his eyes. So we went on in the picnic. I said, John, what did he say to you? He said he didn't have any hampers. I got out there, and there was one hamper sitting in the middle of one row, and one over toward the end. The rest was just black plastic buckets. John said, I like the buckets to pick with. And it looked like where Wimberly had gone down and picked a half a row and filled up, you know, part of a hamper. And he was going out to get some more hampers for us. So we all got a bucket. John says, you know how to pick, Ricky? I said, no. He says, well, you want to do two rows or one? I said, I'll start with one row. He said, oh, Ricky's just going to do one row. Everybody else had two rows. And I had one in this little plastic bucket. And we started picking. And as soon as we bent down, they started talking. I was just wondering if people talk that much in the field. And just like that. As soon as they grabbed a hold of a bean, the talk started.
Just constant.
Just like that. There was John. And there's Louise and Jesse. Louise is married and has some kids. But Jesse is somebody else's boy, Silas's boy. I don't believe any of them related to John. Apparently, Wimberly just called John, needed some picking done, and John had rounded people up. I was wanting to round it up. John says, these are hard to pick. He says, I've picked them easier than this. And he says, well, I've never picked these, and I used to pick strawberries up in New York. And the skis were so bad, you had to put some kind of repellent on you to keep them off. And I just didn't say anything, just wanted picking along. And I'd set the bucket down. After a while, I had sense enough to set it down. I was carrying it in my hand there, and trying to pick with one hand, I kept ripping the bushes out of the ground, which I thought wouldn't go too well for Wimberly if he was going to try for a second picking. And I get two or three in my hand, drop them in the bucket, and I turn around and look. And Louise is just straddling the row, bucket sitting way ahead, and her hands are just flipping through that bush, picking them all off. and I was pulling two or three at a time and taking half the stem with me, and they had every bean separated. And they'd get two big handfuls and drop them in the bucket. And before long, everybody was ahead of me going two rows at once. I just put along in one row and about got half a bucket full. And John would come up behind me and he had this handful of peas. He says, "Looky here, Ricky, you're missing all your peas." Well, I was missing a whole side of the bush. And I was trying to pick the nice long ones that you could see all the peas in. John would just pick anything he'd get a hold of as long as it was a little bigger than his finger. And throw it in his bucket. And say, "Ricky's not going to pick many peas today." Well, I guess I got to about the middle of my row, and Jesse was already at the end, had a hamper full, and was going back. And Louise stopped and looked over at that other half-full hamper and says, "You know, I believe I might put that in mine." John says, "I wouldn't do that. They might charge you for that. They might say you only got part of a bushel. And you never know, they may say there was more in there than there really was." He says, "Well, I believe I'll leave that alone then." About that time, Wembley shows up. And he had a whole stack of crates, and he pulled those out and dropped them in the field and started talking. And after that, John didn't say a word, and Jesse didn't say a word, and Louise didn't say a word. It was just, And Wembley started off. And said, "Now, aren't these the finest black eyes you'd ever seen?" "Oh, yes, sir." "And here's just four." John's complaining because they were so hard to pull. They were so dry. He says, "Yes, sir." "Just had a little trouble getting some pickers for my peas. And if I couldn't get some pickers, I was just going to plow them all under. I'd just be done with them. That's the kind of man I am. If I can't get a decent price for them, I'm not going to give them away. I'll just turn them right under and leave it there." John just, "Sure enough." Wembley got on to McGovern, and he was complaining no end about McGovern. He says, "That man's going to cut our army down one third. He's just inviting the communists over here. And you know what the communists do?" He says, "Well, they get old, they cut your head off. You don't worry any worth to them. You can't produce anything. Those communists just cut your head off." He says, "What we need is Wallace in there. Because we got all those people up there that's making $50,000 a year and they're not doing anything." He says, "That's the trouble with people today. They don't want to work." I says, "Wallace would put an end to that, so that's why they had him shot." Nixon and McGovern won, had him shot. He says, "Those people, that person up there in Tallahassee is running that Arrive Alive campaign. He's making $50,000 a year and he doesn't do anything. He doesn't even make the license plates. He just oversees the whole thing. He gets $50,000 a year. And he says some of those people in Washington make $60,000. "Yes, sir." $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 a year." And I said, "Have you ever been to Washington?" He says, "Why, sure, I've been through the Capitol." I says, "Oh, you haven't been in the Capitol." He says, "Yes, sir, the doors are open." And Jesse turned to me and broke up laughing. Wembley and John walked down the field, and Jesse says, "Have you ever heard a man talk so much? He's a radio." And Wembley looked at me and says, "I remember you from somewhere." And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Yeah, you weren't that packing shed with that other fellow." I said, I work for him." He says, "I've never seen anyone talk so much as that man." He says, "Now, I don't talk any. I just want to keep everything to myself." And Louise and Jesse are over there going, "Well, here comes the radio." He looked out at his peas, and they were the sorriest pea patch I've ever seen. He should have gone ahead and just plowed it under. If he got 25 bushels out of the whole thing, it was nice. And they said he'd seen pickings before that had brought 50 out of the first picking. And he wasn't going to get a second picking out of this. And he said, what it is, he was the only one that did have peas, though. Said his friend had come over and wanted to plant. And he said, "When are you going to be planting, Mr. Wembley?" He says, "Oh, I'm getting ready to now." So this fellow went right on and planted. And says, "Well, Wembley, I wasn't quite ready to plant. I just was getting ready. I waited for another 3 days." Because he knows the signs of the moon. He said, "Yes, sir." "You got to plant when the signs are right." He says, "Now you see, I got peas and he doesn't have anything." He says, and that's the way it is. He says, now the sciences are going to find this out. See, they've already gone through with the suicides and compared them all and found out they were all born on the same sign of the moon. He says, they're going to go through with all these other mental problems and find that out too. I says to John, John, you see, the thing is, you're born under a certain sign of the moon, and that's the talent you get, and that's what you got to have the rest of your life, and that's the way it is. John says, sure enough. We finished those black eyes, and my back, I'd just been bent over for about an hour, and I kept wanting to straighten up, and I thought that'd relax muscles, but that hurt so bad, I just stayed bent down. And I'd only gotten 2 bushels, and John kept looking over and says, how you doing, Ricky? Says, I got about 2. Says, got 2. What you got, Jesse? 5. Almost 6. So we got down the end, I had 2 bushels and almost another done. John says, we'll divide that up. I didn't say anything. He says, oh, Ricky's wanting to be paid for his work. I says, no, John, that's okay. You can divide those up among you. I don't care. We just sat down and rested a bit. And Wimmer, you could see, we didn't want to pick anymore. And he says, well, those white ecopees can go a couple more days. They don't get picked. But now those conchs, they really need to be picked. Yes, sir, I'll be in trouble if they don't get picked. So I go, sure enough. And Jesse didn't want to pick. Louise didn't want to pick. I didn't want to pick. Well, Emily went on and said, now there's not much there. You can go right through that and see, not all of them came up. They just won't take you any time. Just take those buckets. I'll show you a trick. And he picked up the bucket and swung the handle up and bent it so it'd stay up. He says, see, now you can just carry that and that handle won't fall over. So we went ahead and picked his conch piece. He went down the lane and he'd pick one off. And he'd find the biggest one he could. He said, now look at that. Now, isn't that a beautiful piece? He says, they're big and fat. Won't take you any time to fill up your bucket. Well, it would if you could find them, but there weren't any that size except the one he'd found. His old scrawny, dried-up plants. I'd say half of them never came up. You just walked down the middle of the road, there was nothing there. You were picking as fast as you could walk. And then you'd hit a couple that were really loaded. And he said, well, I don't know what it was. That must have been old seed. That's good seed, usually. But that's all I can get from Johnny Palmer. And it probably had worms in it. And that worm eats a pea and kills it, and the plant dies. So Louise and Jesse just gave up and doubled up on their rows to get their hampers full. And I was just moving right along. Louise would look over and say, this is the first time you picked? I said, sure. She says, well, you're doing right well. And I thought, my God, I finally caught on. See, these conchs would come off easy.
Oh.
And I was just racing along. I had one hamper full and I filled up my bucket. When we got to the end, I had 1.5 done. They had 2. John had 3. I don't know where they got them. I think they must know how to pack them. So, we had all those hampers out in the field, and we had to go out and move them to the edge of the road, and then Wembley thought maybe we could help him cap, too. Said he'd pay us for that. Says, just make sure you get the yellow ones out. So he said, boy, come here, I'll show you how to cap them. So I walked over, and he put those wooden lids on top, and then pulls wire across and ties it. He says, now you see, you put your hand on here and pull it tight and pull it here and wrap it around. Now put your thumb here and wrap the wire there. Well, these are the same hampers I've opened for months on end in Winn-Dixie. I didn't say anything. Just let him show me how to do it. He says, now see how nice and tight that is? And you just set on the side of the road. He says, okay. I picked up a handful of wire and caps and over and started doing mine and ran out of wire. I walked all the way back across the field and said, John, I need some more wire. He says, well, if you brought the hamper with you, you wouldn't have to walk back. I said, yeah, that's right. Except I couldn't make the thing up by then. So we got all those 6, and he says to me, I don't want you going off. We're going to be packing down there at Lowell about 3 o'clock. It's easy work. You just going down to that packing house, just down Lowell past the church there. And wait for me, I'll be there. I gotta pick another fellow out. I says, all right. We'll be paying you $1.40 an hour. And John looks at me and says, yeah, and you'll be working 11, 12:30 at night. That's packing house work. I said, oh, uh-huh. So he paid John off. And John and all of them going up to get a hamburger. Oh, that's all I have in my mind. Hamburger and milkshake. And I got my part of the pay. for my four hampers, the dollar hamper. John backed out and headed off. And Wimberly says, well, you can help me load them up. So I rode around on the back of his little Falcon and loaded those hampers in. And he was wondering if he'd get them in. And of course, this little Falcon pickup truck, he had a spare tire back there, a jack and a couple hammers, and an old brick, and miscellaneous tools and greasy rags, pieces of rubber carpet just piled back there. And I couldn't see. He was going to have a problem getting those things in. And he'd say, well, maybe we can throw that brick out. So I'd have to pick this big old concrete brick and throw that out, and we'd load some more hampers in. Well, maybe we can throw that tin can out, too. So I grabbed the old tin can, threw that out. We loaded all those hampers on, the thing just sagged down on its springs and rested. He says, okay, I'll meet you down there. He took off, and I was just wondering if he'd pay me or something for that. And I could see right then, he was good at getting you to work. You know, oh, you can help me with this. And I thought, the hell, oh, I will. But I'll just go along and see what you're doing. So I met him down there at the packing house at 3 o'clock. He showed up and he had this other fellow with him. He was kind of the half-wit guy, about 45, I guess, a big head. And he can talk, but he can't talk clearly. When he says something, it's like, "You play guitar? I play guitar, but I see the rubber." So we sat down, and Wimberly was talking to some of the other women that had come there to pack, and I thought, this is nice. I can listen to Wimberly talk. And this fellow sits down beside me, and here it comes. And just sit down on my feet, down on the coal mine. I just went on and on and on, and I didn't want to turn around and tell him to shut up or anything, because he's sensitive, and Wimberly said, now you all, you know, don't give this fellow a hard time, because he'll go home. So I got caught, and couldn't hear him talking. Well, about that time, all the...
You just get up and go over there.
I was sitting right beside him.
And it doesn't make a damn what happens. If you want to hear him talk, you can just walk, get up, and turn around and do anything you want to. And say, excuse me, but... You can do it. Now, don't forget that.
Yeah.
You just do it easy,
uh-huh,
with a nice tone voice. Like you just hurts you to part from it, and just go on. Don't let anybody ever pin you down.
Yeah.
That's something you have to learn.
You just keep moving. Go ahead.
We couldn't get started because the school kids were there. That was the main body that worked for us, the school kids.
Right. They're waiting for them.
Mm-hmm. And it's 4:30 before they can get going, so I thought we'd sit around. And Wimberly was saying, I'm one of these men that I just can't sit still. I like to keep going all the time. Let's run some beans. Well, we didn't have but four or five people there. He says, we'll run them slow. So they put me down there where they have the two baskets, and the beans drop in. He put a couple people on the conveyor belt and somebody over capping. And what they do is dump the beans in at the end. There's a real slow belt that brought them up and then dropped them onto a faster belt, which went up to where the people were. And then they had fans and things along the way to blow the trash out. And these women would sit there and pick out the bad beans and the vines, and then some of them pick out what they call cappers. And that was a real good bean. It was nice and straight and very green. And they'd try and get them all the same length. And they'd get a handful and stack them real nice and set them in a box. The rest of the beans would go to the end of this conveyor belt and then drop down a chute. The chute divided them up two directions and they just filled up the hampers. When the hamper got full, you just closed a little door on the chute, put another hamper on, and opened the door back up. And they weighed them and made sure they just didn't have quite enough weight, because they put a row of these capper beans on top to make it look nice. And so that girl would keep going back down to the conveyor belt and getting this box full of those cappers. And she'd set them on top of that hamper, two rows deep. They looked just as pretty. Those beans all going the same direction. They're all the same size and shape and color.
and they set the lid on top and wire it down, haul it over to send it off in the truck. So we ran slow like that. And then Mr. Lewis came up with his squash, and everybody groaned. He started unloading that squash in these big field crates. They all went over, punched the button, turned the conveyor belt off, said, well, let's get set up because we got to wash squash. They've got this long metal trough. It must be 20 feet long, 2 feet deep, about a foot or two wide. And we set that up on bricks and then set three stations on it with hampers. We had one hamper for culls, one for the little squash, and one for the big squash. Filled that up with water and just dumped the squash in. About that time, everybody showed up. We had mostly just kids around 14 or 15 and their mothers. Everybody line up there and wash down the squash. And you had to get all the leaves and vines off it and all the dirt and grade it out. And A.L. would just walk back and forth down the line. Now see, when he was out in the field, he was just talking about the colored folks and Johnson showing off. And I was a little bit afraid of the man. He gets up there around those girls and they go, A.L., oh, you're such a hunk of man. Somewhere, I guess. I just never seen anybody so good looking. I guess you're good looking somewhere, aren't you, A.L.? And they'd reach in and pull out the littlest, tiniest, dried up squash they could find and say, why, look at here, it looks just like A.L. And he'd be standing right there the whole time. There was one girl named Becky. Now, Becky was, she was about 5'5", and she was chunky. And loud voice, and just carry on. And Becky talked, you could just hear her all over the room. Say, A.L., A.L., why don't you come over here and get me another hamper, A.L.? I want you over here, you good-looking hunk of man, you. And he'd walk over and she'd grab his cap off and say, oh, would you look at that hair? Isn't that just fine hair? Well, his hair's thinning out, see? And he's parted down the middle and slicked down. And that cap sits on his head. And it fits so well that he didn't ever have to adjust it. He just drops it and goes right in place. And they just pop his cap off all the time. And he's trying to charm them. And see, A.L. had a reputation for always talking about these women he was going out with. And that's all the girls talked about. Oh, A.L. and his women. I just don't know how they resist A.L. Isn't he the handsomest thing? And then they'd try to make a face like his. Well, his is a short face and it's kind of squinted. And they all squint and poke out their lips and do their nose up and look at each other. And then you walk by and they'd all poke each other and straighten up and start washing squash. They said, now you're going to have to wash the squash down because I had to let some of them go last year because they weren't doing their work. So, oh, sure, A.L. Well, Mr. Lewis came up. Mr. Lewis is a good-sized man. Husky, tall, and he's got on this Stetson hat and these boots, jeans. And he just walked by and picked up the squash out of the cull bucket and decided it was okay and put it in the regular bucket. A.L. would just be right there watching, and then he'd poke somebody, and let's get this squash washed. And Mr. Lewis would walk off, and A.L. would just ease off again. Mr. Lewis would say, you know, I don't think we get much work out of these kids. Well, I'll get them working, A.L. would say. All right, let's get this squash washed. Come on. Everybody groan, and Becky would take a squash and say, A.L., can I wash it like you do? And she'd take the squash and...